Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton is our guest. Thanks so much for being with us. You can call in your questions by dialing 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org, or you can tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. Mayor Barton, welcome to your first official Ask the Mayor of 2020, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So we talked with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes last week, and you, like him, have been newly sworn in for your third term as mayor. So my first big question is, what do you know now about being a mayor that you did not know 8 years ago?
Oh, wow. Probably a lot of things, you know, and I had the chance in late November and early December to meet with groups of new mayors who were incoming. And you get that question a lot, you know, what do I know now that I wish I knew then? And there are a lot of things, really, but, you know, just that it takes a lot of time and a lot of patience and a lot of persistence to move things forward and move a community forward. And I think that's just the biggest thing, is just understanding that patience. And I'm not, I mean, I brought patience, some patience with me, but I've had to learn a great deal more in this role.
Okay. So as this new term begins, let's talk through some of your goals for Crawfordsville. So you said, we aren't taking our foot off the gas. And I'll phrase this question more specifically. So what are some smaller items on your agenda? What are some initiatives you'd really like to see through and are fairly confident can happen? And then what are the blue sky reach goals? So we're talking about the small things that you need to take care of, the medium projects, and then the big stuff that might not happen, but you'd really like to see it happen.
That's a complex question.
It is.
there's a lot of pieces to that, you know, and that the comment that you're talking about is something that I said on January 1st when sworn in, and then I reemphasized that point during the State of the City address last week. You know, my point there is that, you know, I'm very well aware that, you know, when you get into the third term, there becomes this, you know, possibility that you can kind of let up a little bit. And we've been doing this for a while and could become complacent. And that is not our goal. I mean, we're not looking at this third term as a chance to, you know, we've done a lot of work. Now let's just kind of step off of things for a little. We're not going to do that. We've got a lot to do. You know, as far as those goals, really tried to lay those out for the community in the State of the City address. But you know, I'll begin with kind of the bigger overarching piece, and that is that we absolutely have to continue progress to make this a community in which people want to live, period. I mean, that's all there is to it. We're working very hard to address the challenges associated with workforce, and that is tied to the fact that we have to grow our community a little bit, we have to get new residents, and we have to keep our next generation here. And everything else we're doing is kind of a spinoff from that. If you think in terms of quality of life projects and infrastructure projects and everything going on, it all kind of comes back to the fact that if we want people to call this community home, we're going to have to get some things in order, and that's what we're trying to do. Then when you get down into more detail, you know, specific projects that are going on, and that's just really continuing a lot of the infrastructure work. We've done major infrastructure projects in the last few years, and those are pretty much behind us now. So now we have to focus on how we build out, and we're working on things like bringing additional housing to the community and things like that.
So given that those are some of the goals, what are some challenges that could lie in the way of achieving some of that? Aside from, you know, the requirement for patience, maybe that you mentioned earlier.
I think the big, you know, challenge that everybody is always up against is you know, you have limited resources, and you always have to work through that. So, you know, the tax caps in Indiana create a challenge for those of us in local government, and, you know, it's a challenge that we're up to. But it means that the pie is only so big, and that's all there is to that. So as we work to move things forward, and I spelled this out in the State of the Community, we have to do so in a way that builds the community but also maintains our financial stability. And that's the challenge that probably every community is up against. And so there's the financial piece of it, and then there's just the challenge of just keeping that cohesiveness and that momentum within the community together as we move forward. And we're in very good shape, you know, on that front right now. Everybody's kind of working really well together here. So you just are constantly out there working to make sure that you continue that. But we're up, you know, we're up against the same challenges that probably all communities our size are up against. And that is that young people have been migrating to the more urban area. And we're all competing for investment and all those kinds of things.
So let's talk some more about the State of the City address. And that was last week for Crawfordsville and Montgomery County. So I'm actually going to start by asking about Pike Place. You said the project kind of exceeded even your expectations in this first year of its being open. And again, Mayor McBarnes and I were talking last week about their new downtown space, Berea Creek Park, the opening of which has been delayed several times over the past year, but it's now slated to open in the spring. And we were discussing programming in that park. Which you alluded to as well in your address. How do you get that up and running, especially initially? You know, and it can be easy, and of course it's a goal to say we're going to have concerts, you know, activities, et cetera. But how many individuals does it really take to make that happen, to take that off the page and make it a reality?
Well, it takes a lot of people. And, you know, our approach was that we as the city are going to pretty much stay out of that. We want to create the venue, create the environment for success there, and then let groups of people and people in the community really kind of drive that and shape that. I don't think there should be anything in our case coming from the city saying we're going to have this kind of concert and that kind of concert. We kind of left that up to the groups, and you know, they're in tune with what the community wants and doesn't want, and they've been very successful in doing so. So we were very deliberate in the first year to not, despite the fact that it exceeded our expectations, we really tried to not overdo it. We wanted to really learn in the first year and get a few things in there and find out what worked and what didn't work and work out all the bugs. And as we started down that path, groups started to jump on board, and they had lots of good ideas about how to program the space. So, you know, our Rotary Club has a concert series. Our Crawfordsville Main Street program has a concert series. So all of those groups started to come together, and really we just create that environment. Probably where we've struggled a little bit, and we pretty much expected this, but and I'm sure Frankfurt will find the same thing, is that when you create this environment and this venue, the sky's the limit as far as what gets proposed. And then you get into the point where you have to really start deciding what's appropriate for that space and maybe what's not appropriate. And that's a different discussion in each community, and you know, different based on the actual venue that's created. So we've had to work through that, and I think we've done a nice job. But, you know, the thing about Pike Place is that when we proposed it and when it was under construction, there was a fair amount of criticism and questions about the project. Is this really needed? And this seems awful wasteful. And now what we hear, we don't really hear that. All we hear is that this is a fantastic space. It looks amazing. It's great in our downtown. And even the people who were kind of on the bubble with this have come to realize that it's a space for them. You know, this is not something that's just programmed by one group of people or whatever, you know, one group wants. And you'll see different segments of the community come together and have events there. And that's the reality. This is their space. This space belongs to the community. And I think that's what's really sold it.
Right, kind of that sense of agency that people have.
Yes.
Do you think that's the most important element of its success over the past year? Do you attribute it to anything else? You know, there is a goal of just getting the message out. Do you think the solid slate of programming just spoke for itself, or was there, you know, another X factor involved here in bringing people on board?
I think it's a combination of factors. I don't think you can point to just one factor, but you know, the hard work put in by those groups such as Main Street and Rotary in this case, they put a lot of work into getting the right kind of performances, you know, organizing. I mean, I'm very well aware there was a lot of work, physical work, that went into setting up for these events, you know, and then creating the right kind of venue in which people felt comfortable. That was part of it. And we saw that in the first few events. People were a little cautious, and they kind of checked it out. And as they saw that, you know, this is nice and it's comfortable and it's for us, and look, all my mom and neighbors are all here, and you know, so the environment was a part of it as well. And I think the location in our case really sells it. And, you know, initially there was concern about the location. It's too close to a state highway and it might be too noisy, but that urban feel in the heart of our downtown is very appealing to people, and they want that kind of setting. And as it turned out, the highway noise from the highway is not a factor at all in these events. And people feel like they're in the downtown, they're in the heart of it. And it's a very comfortable feel. So I think all those factors kind of came together.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg, and we're talking right now with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Thanks so much for listening this afternoon. Remember, you can call in your questions for the mayor by dialing 765-496-1999, emailing ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org, or tweeting a question at WBAA News on Twitter. I'm actually going to quickly diverge for a moment here to a slightly different topic. It was announced that one of Crawfordsville's two Kroger grocery stores closed down or will be closed down. And I saw on social media, it looks like some residents aren't happy about that or confused about that. And to the extent that you can speak to this, you know, given that it looks like one of two Krogers in town, so there is one left, and it looks like it was recently remodeled as well. You know, that's still one less grocery store in town. And I guess just given people's reactions, can you speak to what happened there? Does that mean Crawfordsville just can't support too many grocery stores? You don't need that many grocery stores? Or was there just something going on with this specific Kroger?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors coming together. And we had this concern for a while about this particular store and had reached out to the Kroger company and didn't get any response or feedback to start a dialogue. And so when the announcement was made, we weren't really terribly surprised by that particular announcement. And, you know, my goal in this situation, when the announcement was made, I mean, it was pretty heated in social media and people were up in arms. And, you know, really for me, it's about stepping back and really making sure we have a well thought out response and a plan for moving forward. And that's really what we did. And I put some thoughts in the local newspapers the following week, kind of summarizing where I was at on this and my view of this. And, you know, at the end of the day, this is a free market economy and businesses make their decisions based on where they can succeed and not succeed. And that's, I think, what we saw play out here. And, you know, there's always concern. You know, they said the store wasn't profitable. Was it profitable or not? Well, you know, none of us are going to know that. We have to take their word for it. But it seems unlikely that a business would walk away from a venture that was profitable for them. So that decision was made. You know, and I think what I tried to point out in the article is that we are seeing, you know, the retail landscape always changes and always has. Mm-hmm. And that's especially true right now in the grocery section of retail. We're seeing a lot of changes, and really Crawfordsville was kind of one of the last communities that we saw that play out. We've seen it play out in much larger communities already. And there's just a change in the landscape on that retail side. And you've got many factors coming together. You've got an influx of convenience stores. You have the dollar stores. You have online sales. You have all those things coming together to change the retail grocery landscape. And that's what's happening here. I think for us, it was, you know, especially troubling because we recently lost another large grocery store. The County Market had closed down and converted to something much smaller. So you put those two factors together, and it does raise eyebrows, and it certainly raises concern for us from the city's perspective. You know, the other part of that is that we are working very aggressively to create an environment, and we've engaged in discussions with other grocers about coming to this community. And right now I feel reasonably confident that that's going to happen in the next year, that we will have some more options in this community because, you know, the market is here. And I think for Kroger, it was probably a tough decision paying overhead on two stores versus one in this community. And the other thing that I pointed out to the community, it's very easy in this situation to become, you know, all emotional and upset and, you know, want to talk about what's happening with these large companies. But Kroger's been a very long time partner in our community and operates one of their premier manufacturing facilities here in Pace Dairy Products, which is a very valuable partner in our community. So you really have to step back and take a deep breath and look at the totality of it. But it was a it was an announcement that, you know, certainly caused some discussion in this community. And I think we have a reasonable plan to move forward.
Can you talk a little bit about that plan? How are these conversations going with other potential grocers? How do you convince them that Crawfordsville is the place they want to be?
Well, ultimately, it comes down to numbers. I mean, they certainly all have a plan, you know, a business plan that they follow, a formula for success, if you will. And they're going to look at raw data and raw numbers first and foremost. And then we have to give them the assurance that we will be a good partner in this community to help them succeed. In this particular case, it is kind of boiling down to some infrastructure work that needs to happen to get particular grocers to come to this community. And we've stepped up to the plate and said that we will be a partner in making that infrastructure, making those infrastructure improvements to make it possible. So it is a good discussion, and a discussion that I will say changed when Kroger made this announcement, because that's a double-edged sword. They could look and say, well, if somebody else is leaving, you know, maybe that's not a good sign of what things are like here. Or they can look and say, this is an opportunity. And I think that's what we're seeing, that they see this as an opportunity.
Okay. Can you talk more about how you and I have talked about trains before. I know you've talked about trains often on this program and with our newsroom in general. Can you talk more about how the rail line along Franklin Street is affecting the city's trail projects, like connecting Sugar Creek Trail to the downtown trail? Because ideally, the goal would be removal, correct?
That was the original plan. CSX had expressed a desire to remove that line, and that made perfect sense for us to put the trail there and connect everything and really bring the Sugar Creek Trail into the heart of the city so people could access it. I always say we have an amazing trail with Sugar Creek Trail. The problem is people have to get in a car to get to it for the most part, and that just doesn't make any sense. So that was the original plan, and now obviously we're several years into this, and they have not been able to remove that line, largely because there's one customer on the line who still uses it. And we've really tried to explore other options for that industry and how they can still get shipments by rail without the necessity of that particular line that creates, I think it's 13 crossings in our city to get to them. So we've explored those options, and we just really haven't come up with the solution. That industry has also recently announced some major expansion in our community, which, you know, is an absolutely wonderful thing. But it also complicates this scenario. So what I've told people is, you know, that's an ongoing discussion between the rail line, you know, in this case, CSX Transportation, and that particular industry, which is LSC Communications. And we just ultimately need to let that play out and see what happens. And the reality is, if the rail line is removed, we will work with LSC to find other options, and we will put trail on that rail bed. If the rail line stays, then we'll just work around it. We'll still get the trail connected, but we'll have to find another route to make it happen.
You also announced during your State of the City address that crews will be working on East Wabash Avenue this year, which will be closed, I saw, from Mill Street to near the California Pellet Mill. And you referred to this as a painful project while also acknowledging that it's necessary work. So what can you tell residents who might be listening about what they can expect on this project?
Well, yeah, you know, it's a project that's very necessary because the sub base there just is not holding up, and we've repaved the road several times and it just continues to fall apart. So, you know, we're going to have to come in and just tear it out and rebuild it. The actual plan has not, you know, fully been created yet. So we don't know exactly how it's going to play out, nor do we know what the timing is going to be. There are weather factors there. You know, we have to get it bid out yet. We have to get it under contract, those kind of things. I think what's going to happen is that we will try to do one side at a time, so we will still have one lane moving through there. I don't think the plan is to totally close it. I think what makes me nervous, and probably most of the community nervous, aside from the fact that that's a busy street any day of the week, that is the area that has the one bridge over the rail line. And if we have a problem on the rail line, we have a stalled train or a stopped train, that is the only way within the city to connect one half of the city to the other half. So now all of a sudden you cut that down to one lane.
Right.
That could become a real headache. And so, you know, as we move forward with this project, it has to happen. It just has to happen. We will spend a lot of time planning and preparing for those kinds of scenarios to make sure we have a plan to move traffic through there in the event we have to really rely on that bridge.
How much, and I was going to ask that because that sounds like a scenario you would certainly have to prepare for. How much notice are you going to be able to give people about those types of issues, and how will you disseminate that information?
Well, we will certainly publish the timeline for the project once it's, you know, really kind of set. And we're still a ways from knowing any of that information right now. And then, you know, as far as updates when there is a traffic problem, we try to push that out in social media rather quickly. We will have to really pay attention to make sure we're doing that in this scenario. And the reality is the best advice is going to be just avoid the area.
Right.
You know, when that happens, because it's going to be very, very difficult. You know, it's moving local traffic around in that situation is doable. And we've made some changes there, like some turn arrows and things like that, that's helped with it. The problem is that you're talking about state highways with a lot of truck traffic, and we cannot easily maneuver them through those city streets and make that detour work. So that's what kind of plugs things up and really causes our problems. And that's why we've continually had this discussion with NDOT, and we've continuously applied for funding to get this addressed and haven't been successful yet.
You also talked in your address about Crawfordsville as a model in its handling, among other health-related issues, of drug addiction. And you talked about Crawfordsville as a national model, not just a state model or a West Central Indiana model, but again, a national model. So what is Crawfordsville doing around that issue that another city anywhere in the country can apply to their own issues, since this is a nationwide issue?
Right. You know, the mobile integrated health, what originally we called community paramedics, and we now refer to it as mobile integrated health, what we're doing here really has become the standard for the rest of the nation. And, you know, it's because we're applying some really common sense approaches that are hands-on and they work. I mean, the data speaks for itself. And, you know, if you can replicate that in other communities, you could have a tremendous financial impact. And, you know, what we're doing is really holding people's hand and walking them through the process with these specially trained people to go after and reduce hospital readmissions. And that has now spilled over into the substance abuse and addiction side, in which what we're doing is basically, if somebody goes to an ER with an overdose from here, or somebody's referred in, we have specially trained team, what we call a quick response team, that works with them to, for lack of a better phrase, guide them in through the process to find treatment. And it's not one size fits all. You need different options in different cases. And this team has been especially trained. So it's well-experienced paramedics who also have some law enforcement background, and they have law enforcement at their disposal. We also have a full-time social worker, and they understand the treatment system. And that's where things really kind of run afoul for people is, let's say somebody overdoses and they go to an ER, and that's a time that they're vulnerable and say, you know, okay, I need help and I want to make changes. That's when they're most likely to do that. The chance of them getting help in that particular situation under the normal model is very, very low. They're going to get released and try to steer them into treatment, you know, in 6 weeks and that kind of thing. And it doesn't work. They're going to go back and they're going to use again. So what we do is immediately grab them, they're referred in the program, and start navigating them into treatment. What sets aside what we're doing, and a lot of communities are trying to do that, what sets us aside is we've built a comprehensive team that not only does that piece, but is also tied to the healthcare providers so that we can get somebody access to the medications that stop the cravings. Because if it's going to be, and we call that bridging, but if it's going to be a couple of 3 weeks before they can get in to see, you know, a counselor and addictions and start down that process, if you don't do something to physically stop those addictions, you know, the chances are they're not going to succeed. And so this team is especially trained to do that. And it's the only team out there that's really encompassing every aspect of it. And again, as I said, it's not one size fits all. So they have different approaches in different situations, but they are guiding people, navigating them into the treatment system, holding their hand and making sure they get there. And a big component of what they do is people being released from the jail, They walk them through to make sure they have the tools for success. And they physically pick them up when they're released and take them to their first probation appointment, take them to their physician so they can get prescribed, and then make sure they get into the counseling and the treatments that they need. And they really hold their hand through it. And it's working. It is absolutely working in our community.
So you're describing something that's a pretty comprehensive approach, almost kind of a wraparound type of service. How do communities who don't have Crawfordsville's resources work on building up that type of team? Because what you described might not be easy for everyone to model, especially perhaps in a smaller community with fewer resources.
Well, I think reach out. You're welcome to reach out to our community. They'll help guide you. The Indiana State Department of Health has been an absolute solid partner in this. The State Health Commissioner has been a partner. Your local health departments are always a resource. And then just really try to learn from what other communities are doing. But I will tell you, the key to this component and the key to the other components of mobile integrated health, whether it's chronic disease, we have a program for prenatal care, that always the key is community involvement and cooperation. You have to have all the players at the table, and everybody has to play nicely together. And as I always say, check your ego at the door. We're all in this together, and that's what makes it succeed. And if you can put that together in your community, regardless of size, you will be successful.
So the number of emergency calls to the Crawfordsville Fire Department increased again in 2019. There were more than 4,000 calls last year. I saw the fire chief attributed this to an aging population, you know, calls about falls, things of that nature, and also commented that 20 years ago he didn't recall seeing anything quite like this. So would that be your assessment as well? That's kind of the chief driver of that statistic.
Yeah, 20 years ago, I was his partner. So I think what he saw is what I saw. But, mm-hmm. I do think that I think it's a combination of things. I do think it is an aging population for sure. And I think we've seen a change in what the fire department's called for, so to speak. You know, people are going to call for a wider variety of things that they didn't call 911 for years ago. So all those factors come together. But it is alarming. We've seen about a 10% increase in their workload every single year, predominantly on the medical side, obviously, despite the fact that we're out there and we have comprehensive programs to try to work with people to prevent falls and things like that. So we have a lot of work to do, but it's all those factors coming together. It really is.
How might it impact the fire department's ability to carry out some of its other responsibilities?
Well, it has an impact. And training is a big part of what they do, and it has impacted that for sure. They don't have as much downtime for training, and I tried to point that out. It's very tough to fit that in, the number of responses they're making. And it has an impact on personnel, keeping personnel, because they are so busy, they just literally burn out.
That is our time for today. Mayor Barton, thanks so much for being with us. You can find this program at our website, wbaa.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions for any of the four mayors at ask@wbaa.org or tweet us at WBAA News on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening this afternoon and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.